This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We conclude week 14 tonight in the desert. Train wreck of a season. Michael Lombardi, Patrick Maher here. Train wreck of a season for the Arizona Cardinals. You heard from Thomas Gable. Look, the Patriots are in the mix here. Patriots are 6-6 straight up, Michael. They're 6-5-1 ATS, two straight losses. But Arizona, 4-8, 6-6 ATS. There's a great write-up. I think Humans is doing this every Monday over at vsin.com. You can sign up for the daily newsletter, which is free. And Matt Humans, who's a regular here on the Lombardi Line, has a great write-up on this game tonight. But when I just tell you about the matchup, what stands out? First thing, Patriots-Cardinals, because I got a couple of points I want to roll at you after that.
Well, the first thing that stands out is the Patriots' ability to handle a six-back offense, which Arizona runs to a degree, but not really. Like, Kyler runs the ball, but not as much as, say, Justin Fields does, or even Josh Allen, which I think will help them. And it's about really New England controlling the pass rush and forcing Kyler Murray to play quarterback and taking advantage of the offensive line. And this is a lot at stake for this game because, you know, the Jets are 7-6, and Robert Saleh says he'll see Buffalo again. But I don't know if he realizes if New England wins, they have the tiebreaker against the Jets. I mean, they beat the Jets twice. So that 7-6 is really, you know, that if they're tied, the Jets are out. So it's a big game for New England. And New England's got to be able to protect the football, run the ball, and then, as Thomas Gable said, get improve in the red zone and score some points, you know, get touchdowns and not settle for field goals.
So a couple things here, set you up on the number. New England opened, as you heard from Thomas, 1 at his shop, up to 2.5. I don't think we're going to see a 3. Obviously, you'd see buyback immediately with Arizona if we went up to 3. But 2.5 right now is the number. Total sitting 43.5 at most shops. Let's start with the Patriots on offense, and I'll give you some trends. 20th in scoring offense, 20.8. Red zone efficiency, they're dead last. Let me ask you this way. Patricia, obviously, a lot of attention drawn to the first-year play caller. When I think of red zone success or lack of it, I think of inexperience as a play caller. Isn't there something to that, right? Not having that package in the red zone for a guy that's experienced calling plays down there.
Well, especially for a team like New England that can run the ball. I mean, most teams that have good run games are better in the red zone because you can run it in. You know, you can run the ball into the end zone, and that eliminates having to make those difficult throws. I mean, that's what was the Carolina when they got the ball in the red zone against Seattle, and they had first and goal with the 3 after they got that first down. They threw 4 passes, which was surprising, right? I mean, they'd run the ball the whole time, and they're a good run team. So, yeah, a lot of that is creativity. A lot of it is, too, is having a quarterback who can make loose, who moves around and buys time and separates the defense. And so the defense starts running around looking for the guy and then makes a throw. So it's a combination of all those. And for New England, you know, to have a quarterback that should be smart, not that he's going to run around, but to have a quarterback that – and a running game that can run the ball, you would think they would be better in the red zone than they are. But a lot of it is, you know, creativity by the quarterback, too.
So Arizona, they've lost 4 of 5. They're 31st, so maybe the Patriots can get healthy. They're 31st in scoring defense, giving up close to 27 points per. Their last 4 losses, they're allowing 32 points per game. I did have one question for you, and that is, you talked about the six-back offense, but is it a mismatch here with Murray's speed against those slow linebackers for the Patriots?
It is, but Murray's not—he's not going to be—if they don't contain him, it's hard to contain Allen. It's easier to contain Murray because he can't see. He can't see, so he starts to kind of move around. He doesn't really know where he wants to go. So it's a lot easier to do that. You mentioned the line. You know, we talked about this on Sunday, about almost 80% of the games in the NFL this year, the line was meaningless, right? We talked about that. Well, okay, the Jets, it mattered for the Jets. It mattered for the Cowboys. You know, it didn't matter in the Ravens game because the Ravens were dogs going in that. And the Chiefs, 3 of the games yesterday, that's the line mattered. That was the only 3 games.
Right.
I mean, so, yeah. I mean, if you think New England's going to win, 2.5 is probably, you could play it. I just think, to me, we get so caught up in that line when yesterday, the perfect example was the line was only 3 games it mattered in.
So important here for bettors. Belichick has always been great after a loss. You can tell me why. He's 63-34-1 ATS following a loss as the coach of the Patriots. After a loss since the start of last season, he's 7-3-1 ATS. This year, he's 3-1-1 ATS after a loss. What is it about Belichick getting the team to focus, and they're in that spot tonight after a loss?
Well, I mean, he captures their attention, you know, and he kind of can point out, hey, we can't do it this way. We got to play differently. We can't turn the ball over. And he's had really another bye week, really. The last time he played was Thursday night against Buffalo at home. And so he's had 10 days to get ready for Arizona. And they played Arizona a couple years ago with Cam Newton back then with Kyler Murray. I think it was like week four of the season. And they did a good job of Murray. They made a field goal late in the game. They kind of snuck away with win with that one. But, I mean, he'll spend a lot of time, and I think he's got the team's full attention. I mean, coming off the Minnesota loss and then really getting embarrassed by Buffalo at home, if you don't have the team's attention, you're never going to get it.
Well, you mentioned rest, and good job by Elliott here. In the last 20 years, Belichick is 21-13-2 ATS the regular season with at least 10 days of game prep. So, you know, give that guy more opportunities to sit in the lab and watch tape. He's going to come out with an advantage. It's kind of what he does.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have a good plan. They got to execute the plan, but they can't turn the ball over, and they've got to be able to run the ball. This will be a close game. It'll go into the fourth quarter, and they've got to make the plays in the fourth quarter to win it.
So Kingsbury, to be fair, underdog spot. Since he was hired in 19, he's 23-12-2 ATS as a dog. Remember, this team doesn't play as well at home. It's not necessarily an overwhelming home crowd advantage, but for some reason, they just haven't played well at home as well. Now, we talked about coordinator battles all the time. You brought it up during your look ahead last week, Patricia versus Vance Joseph. How do you see this playing out? Vance Joseph wasn't shy in his evaluation of what he sees with the Patriot offense.
Yeah, I mean, he feels like he knows what they're going to do, right? He feels very comfortable in knowing it's going to be a lot of screens, protect the football, you know, don't take too many chances down the field. You know he's going to try to pack the field. He's going to try to play this as close as he can and dare the Patriots to throw the ball down the field. I think that's how he's going to do it. Now, we got a coach on one side of the field who's pretty good at adjusting. I think Belichick will know what Vance is going to try to do, and they have enough time to prepare the answer, right? I mean, he declared to them that they love to run bubbles, they love to do this. Okay, so we know you're going to pack the line, you're going to be in there, you're not going to give us any easy throws, and you're going to try to defend the run. Well, we should have a game plan against that.
Does Patricia play a little chess here? He's had extra time, like you said. Patricia's been he's been a head coach. He should be able to adjust. When he hears what Vance Joseph says, does he then go and adjust based on what he said? You know, a bit of a chess match?
Yeah, I think they all do. I think the head coach particularly. Okay, here's what they said. Here's how he's going to want to play us. Plus, you know, they get an idea on how people want to play. I mean, look, the league is a copycat league, right? So they're going to watch the two Jet games. Arizona's going to watch the two Jet games, and they're going to see if they can duplicate those game plans. They're going to watch the Minnesota game plan to see what they should do. They're going to watch the Buffalo game plan. And I think that's how they're going to try to play it. You know, I mean, the team, look, they had 409 yards against Minnesota. You know, the last time they had that many yards, they had to go back to October the 16th when they had 400 against Cleveland. So, you know, he's going to watch those tapes and figure out Chicago, the Jets game. Even though they won a couple of these games, Indianapolis did a hell of a job. They won 26-3, but Indianapolis held them to 203 yards.
To close out the conversation as far as the OC, remember in the summer, we spent an extensive amount of time talking about the play calling, who was it going to be for the Patriots. And to be fair, everybody said it seems like a disaster to plug Patricia in, and it hasn't been overwhelmingly positive. Is this the course? Is he going to continue with Patricia, and this was just a year to get him up to speed? Like, what is the purpose here at OC?
I think there has to be, you know, one thing is when you're as successful as he's been, he's always been very reflective. And I think you got to take a look at that. I think you got to really take a strong, hard look at that and see, you know, where we have to improve. It's not about ego. It's about how do I improve? And I think that's got to be a step. I mean, they need somebody to come in there to help fix that offense. And it's not Matt and it's not Joe Judge. Somebody's going to have to come in and what happens is the head coach is the head coach, so he's not going to go in there and do it all the time either. He can help out. But I think that's ultimately really going to be a critical part. I think that's going to be a huge discussion this offseason. What is the plan? Now, look, they've got two road games. They got Arizona and Las Vegas. Their season's going to come down to those two games, right? If they win two games here, they're 8-6. Go back home, play Cincinnati. It'll be a hard game. Then they get Miami, and they get Buffalo. Probably the Buffalo game's going to matter because Buffalo's going to want to keep home field advantage. It's not going to be an easy sled for the Patriots.
No, it's not. It's not going to be easy. The other side, my assumption is Kingsbury returns. They're 4-8. But you know what's interesting? Ever since they went to SoFi down the road here and got absolutely embarrassed in that wild card round against the Rams, it's been downhill, no?
Yeah, no. I don't know if Cliff's going to come back. I don't know if Michael Bidwell's going to make a change with Steve Keim or what he's going to do. But right now, if you ask anybody in the league, there's a lot of dysfunction within that building.
Oh, so there's stuff going on in that locker room is what you're telling me.
A lot of dysfunction in that building.
Don't get the impression they love the quarterback. And I don't get the impression the quarterback cares.
Yeah, I don't get that either. You know, the other thing in this game, too, last time the Patriots played on Monday night, they got embarrassed by the Bears. They got really four turnovers. They got embarrassed. I mean, that trust me, that's going to bother them. Coming off a big win in Cleveland.
Up to 2.5. I don't think we're going to see a 3. Interesting, off the one opener. The Patriots getting bet in the desert. Actually, the betting's quite split, so maybe indicative of maybe a little smarter money going the Patriots' way. When we come back, speaking of smart, you're going to hear from Dan Campbell. The Lions roar.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It's that time of the year. It's the holidays. And, of course, VSiN has got you covered for the holidays. Become a VSiN Pro. You get access to 24/7 network streaming. Of course, you get the betting guides for bowl games. The big game, of course, $20 credit to the VSiN store right now. Now, $79 is going to get you access to everything we offer through March Madness. It's very important. We take you through the college basketball season, so we transition. VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Go sign up, and we'll give you $20 to go spend at the store for some holiday gifts. VSiN.com/subscribe. So I want to start here with the Detroit Lions. Ben Johnson is their play caller. He is a North Carolina. He was a walk-on at North Carolina. He got a degree in mathematics and computer science. So we've got another computer scientist on the Lions coaching staff, like Matt Patricia, except this one.
No offense, Matt knows what he's doing. Math majors make great play callers because they see the game in three dimensions.
Go ahead, continue. So it's more of just the way that their brain works.
It's the way they're wired, the way they kind of see it. I mean, Bobby Petrino was a math major. Josh McDaniels, all these guys that I know that are good play callers are math majors. It's kind of interesting.
You know,
and that's
the
theory I have. Yeah, they kind of have a sense of how to put it together. Like, I was bad at geometry. I don't know any of that stuff. I'm bad at math, you know. That's why I have one of those things that add up things for you.
Calculator?
You know, calculator. There you go.
Hey, you know what, when you see it, and I mean this about Ben Johnson, there is just a rhythm to his play calling. He's 36. He's kind of worked his way through the coaching ranks, an unknown guy. But his offense, think about it this way. The Lions are 4-1 in their last five. They're top five in offense in both total yards and points per game. They score at will. They're on a record as far as a franchise record streak over the last five. And we have to give credit to Goff. I killed Goff earlier in the year. The past five games, 70% completion percentage almost, over 1,300 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, and
interceptions.
No picks from Jared Goff.
And I think they've done a great job with their offensive line. I mean, their guards are back healthy again. I mean, their tackles are really good, and they can run the football. And he, you know, they make play. And Goff has thrown look, say whatever you want about Goff, and I've said a lot about him, but he's playing as well as he did for Ben Johnson as he ever did for Sean McVay. You know, and yesterday they had 30 runs in the game. You know, for 134 yards, but really that one punt return was, that one fake punt was 42 yards. They didn't really run the ball that effectively. They really didn't run the ball that effectively, but they were able to set up their play action, and he's got a 48-yard touchdown pass to Chark, a 41-yard touchdown pass to Williams, who was wide open. You know, it made great throws down the field.
He
and
did.
This offensive line, which is way better than the offensive line that he played with in the Super Bowl. Like, this is a really good offensive line. Now, you know, in that Super Bowl, they had Whitworth at right left tackle, and they had Haverstein. Their inside players weren't as good. This, when Detroit was suffering through some losses, they had injuries inside their offensive line, which affects Goff the most.
No, the offensive line is one of the better ones in football. They iced the game, by the way, with their tackle and Penei Sewell on that 3rd and 7. Yeah. But they also got Jamison Williams back. And my friends have been sending me clips all day with the speedster out of Alabama. He caught the bomb for the touchdown, but also I've been getting sent clips of him with some crackback blocks. Like, he's completely into it. DJ Chark is starting to break out. We know Ross St. Brown. It's one of the better offenses in football. And I'm not saying that, you know, in a hyperbolic sense. I'm saying it really is. It's a prolific offense right now.
Yeah, and they've got, and they can do a lot of different things, right? So they can run power with Williams. They can run the outside and the inside stuff with Swift. And then they've got the ability to make plays down the field with the receivers. Chark coming back now has been big for them because he gives them that vertical outside. Then they get Williams back to go with, you know, with St. Brown in there. And so now they've got a lot of things going for them. I mean, they really, look, they played well yesterday, you know, and they're able to, you know, they've, it's a little bit like when we talk about, you know, when we talk about Mike Williams and we talk about Keenan Allen, you know, there's always that guy that St. Brown makes the tough catches, 6 catches for 68, yep. 11.3. Chark's got 6 catches, 15.7. And then, you know, Williams has 1 catch. So guys are making plays. And I think what they really have been incredible about, Patrick, is their red zone production has been so good. I mean, they've been able to get the ball in the end zone and they score they deliver touchdowns. I mean, that's different than what has happened, you know, like, say, New England. I mean, this team is really good. They're the best red zone team in football.
We're going to hear
and yesterday,
from a coach.
Yesterday, they stopped the run. That's what they did really good. But, look, let's face it. They got a break on that call. I mean, Jefferson never stepped out of bounds. I don't know what they saw. He never stepped out of bounds. And if Minnesota would have had the ball any more in the game, I mean, they were able to keep the ball away from Minnesota, which was critical because Minnesota, you know, was moving the ball at will on them really at time. They turned it over in the red zone. I mean, Minnesota, I mean, Detroit had the ball 31 minutes in the game.
It's almost like they went into the game. You can see the numbers, Michael. They had a strategy of not trying to stop Justin Jefferson and shutting everybody else down. That was It's because he's going to get his. By the way, we're going to hear from a coach that not only threw to ice the game, a pass to his tackle, but called for a successful fake punt on 4th and 8 from his own 26. He is Dan Campbell, and here he is.
I'm drained. But I'm excited, believe me. I mean, the guys know how I felt all week about this game. But, yeah, look, I don't think there's a surprise here. We you know, I've said it before. You know, it's hard when you get down in the dumps and you were where we were at. You know, it's easy to lose faith, but these guys never did, and we stayed true to what we're about. And they knew, they believed we were one play away, and that's where we've been. And so now we're making the play. You know, we're making the one extra play. It's not costing us. You know, and we're able to overcome some of these mistakes we were making earlier. So, no, our guys, they know they belong. They know they belong, and they know when they play football like we've been playing the last 6 weeks, we can play with anybody. That's the truth.
He stinks in-game, but he's won me over. I have to admit, I'm a convert. He's won me. Now, he's terrible in-game, and that hasn't changed. But think about this. A 1-6 start, they're now 6-7. They've won 5 of 6. They're 2 games back in the loss column behind the Giants and Commanders, but everything played out perfectly for the Lions yesterday. The Giants and Seahawks loss. A 4-0 finish gives them a great chance to get into the postseason. 9 wins may be enough, so 3-1. They're at the Jets, they're at Carolina, they host Chicago, and they're at Green Bay, their final four.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they keep playing at their level, like I said about it, step into my office, it's really about them playing at that level, handling the rat poison, making sure that they don't fall prey to all the praise that they're going to get, you know, and all the people that want to come do interviews with them, and then all of a sudden they think they're better than they are. They have to keep staying on the grind. because, you know, they're not good enough on defense. Let's face it. I mean, you don't give up that many yards. I mean, Kirk Cousins only had 10 incomplete passes in the game. I mean, and he just didn't have the ball enough. Now, they couldn't run the ball. Give them credit. They're playing better defensively. They got sacks. You know, they're getting sacks on the quarterback. But their margin for winning, it really comes down to their execution of the offense, which we saw disappear when they played Miami in the second half, right? We've seen it go away at times based on the ability of the other team to pressure. So I think it's really, it's just one day at a time for them.
They could have beaten Miami. They were up big at the half. They certainly could have beaten Buffalo. Without Dan Campbell lost the game against Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, they did, you know, he did. I mean, he did. You know, but the Miami game was one. And they, hey, look, you know, I liked him against Dallas, and I had him and I lost that 24-6. It's 10-6 with the ball at the 1-inch line, and that would have been a different game. But then they turned the ball over four times. Think about this though. Give them credit. They have not turned the ball. They've turned the ball over three times since that Dallas game, since the bye week. And they have created 11 turnovers, 12 turnovers since that point. And this is the difference in their team. They're creating turnovers and they're not giving the ball away. Whereas earlier in the season, they couldn't create a turnover. They had like four in the first 5 weeks.
Very
remember,
dangerous.
Patrick, go back to the opening game. I mean, they played Philly 38-35. Philly had to run the game out at the end, right?
Dude, you can't do this. I'm a 44-year-old man. I've watched the Lions my whole entire life, one playoff win since 1957. But I will tell you, I'm starting to buy in just because.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they played Philly, they won't beat Philly. They can keep pace with Philly in terms of
they can score with anybody. They would give Philly
a lot of problems with their offense versus Philly's defense. That's not a matchup Philly wants to play. The problem is they don't have a good matchup against Philly's offense. They're just not fast enough on defense, you know, and that's why Philly was able to have 455 yards on them.
That's a great point. There, you watch the Lions, you can tell they're not a fast defense. Hey, you want to take a shot at Detroit at the Jets again? Mike White, it says TBD on our board, but you want to take a shot at the number? That's the early window coming up this Sunday, Detroit at the Jets.
I'm saying the Jets are a one-point favorite at home, 1.5.
Nailed it. Literally, that's the opener, 1.5 at most shops. Now, it is a pick 'em at most shops, and obviously that's because of the quarterback news, a little question.
If they go back to Flacco, Detroit will be the favorite. If Flacco has to play, Detroit's the favorite.
That is a fascinating game just because there's two head coaches that their mentality and identity is built on toughness. So it's going to be a dogfight. Fascinating. Lions are in the mix. I can't believe it. In the mix next here on the Lombardi Line, Mike Pritchard. Look forward to talking to Pritch.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Bowl season kicks off Friday. We've got you covered for every game. Picks on every bowl game, power ratings for every team, bowl betting strategy. You have to be a VSiN pro. We've been talking about this now. VSiN.com/subscribe. Remember, all of the guides are there, including the World Cup, which continues. VSiN.com/subscribe for the bowl betting guide, which is, it's really, really good. They did a great job with it. VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we welcome you back. It's a Monday on the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. Elliot Bauman producing. Mike Pritchard joins us, former first-round draft pick, contemporary here at VSiN, of course, our NFL insider host as well. But I want to just, if you guys can both look at your monitor, Pritch, I don't know if you can see it, but one of our intrepid listeners actually sent out a tweet. Michael, if you can check it out. Pritch was
in Denver
yesterday holding on to the flag. We got a tweet from somebody talking about Pritch. Pritch, you look good there from the back. What's up?
Yeah, you know what? The body type is probably accurate, right, for right now. I was a little leaner. But no, there's a few Pritchard jerseys floating around in Denver or around in Colorado. So that's awesome to see that.
I love it. Speaking of Colorado, how are we doing in recruiting? How are we doing?
Fantastic. fantastic, Michael. It's been incredible. Just the amount of attention to Colorado football is unprecedented right now. I mean, it reminds you back of the glory days when I was there, certainly in the late 80s and early 90s. And I just talking to a whole bunch of former players, from Michael Westbrook to Chris Hudson to Joel Klatt. And I mean, everybody is so fired up about what's going on out there in Colorado with Coach Prime. the staff that he's assembled, and the opportunity to land some really prized recruits out there across the nation.
Michael,
awesome.
If I could ask you, follow up on that, you wrote about it at the Daily Coach. What did you ultimately think of Dion's opening speech to the team?
Look, I think it's a conflict, and I really thought it was the right thing to do. I think the conflict as a leader is you want honesty. Everybody wants honesty from a leader, right? But he wasn't politically correct. I'm okay with that. Like, what he did was he basically issued a challenge to those kids saying, hey, look, you know, I bet on myself. Nobody wanted to hire me. I took the Jackson State job, you know, and now I'm taking the Colorado job. I'm betting on myself. We're going to get a lot of new players. We're not going to be as bad as we were. If you're not good enough, you're not going to be here. Instead of coming in and saying, I'm going to give everybody an opportunity, I'm going to be. Meanwhile, everybody that says that behind the scenes says, we're going to run some of these kids off. That's what they say. He just did it to me in the open, and he was very transparent. I actually liked it.
You agree, Pritch?
I do. I've been in a meeting like that, and it was with Mike Holmgren when he first arrived in Seattle. And you know, we were 8-8 team, kind of an average football team, but here's a guy with credibility and certainly the pedigree and the path to a Super Bowl and to a championship. And so that first meeting is, I'm not here for you guys that like me, but you will respect me. I'm here for a reason. And some of you guys is that reason, you know, are that reason that I'm here. And it's like, we need to weed you guys out. We need to get rid of you, because the reason why we have a new head coach in this situation, the reason why I took this job, is twofold. There's some attractive players here and players I want to work with. And the other side of that is there's some guys here that I don't want to work with and I can't win a championship with. So that set the tone. And if anything about Coach Prime that you need to know as a leader, as a person in this situation, certainly as a player back in his play days, he set the tone. He took every rep in practice. He outworked everybody. And certainly led the way from a standard. And so I think he's trying to implement that from day one, from minute one out there at CU.
For a program that had been dormant, the spotlight is going to be on Boulder from now all the way through next season. Michael, that's a good start, right? Yep. Regardless of what happens, you at least need to start bringing attention to the program. There's a lot of competition.
No doubt. And people will, you know, nobody can remember when Mike was there and how great it was, you know. And so now we see, you know, now there's kind of, we can go back at the time where, you know, Mike Pritchard played there and Michael Westbrook and Cordell Stewart and Bieniemy, all those guys, the great player, Chad Brown. I mean, they were loaded. I mean, you know, the inside linebacker for the Patriots, Ted Johnson. I mean, there were a ton of players from there.
Chad Brown from L.A. Remember that pipeline? Chad Brown, Bieniemy, Pritch from L.A. Chad Brown ended up being a great linebacker. Did you play with Brown in Seattle?
I did. We recruited him. Chad was just out here, too, in Vegas for the Pac-12 championship. We're all on the football council there for the Pac-12, and he came out. And so we were talking about the prospects of Coach Prime and certainly the pride in the program. I even asked him. I asked him this question. Point blank, I was like, I don't know if I've ever asked you this question, Chad, but how did you get out of L.A., right? And because you got SC there, you got UCLA. I thought from Vegas, I was going to UCLA because of Eric Ball and Gaston Green and all those people, and I wanted to be a part of that program in the Rose Bowl, right? And it's something about Colorado. Once you step your foot on campus, it's magical. And now that the attention is and the shine is back on the school, Coach Prime will get those student-athletes on campus and not only being a part of what he is all about, and certainly the prospects of getting to the National Football League as well as competing at a high level and perhaps a national championship, but you're going to fall in love with that campus and that community. So there's a lot to love right now, a lot of momentum for CU football.
Okay, we'll recap yesterday. Pritch went 3-0. We'll also get to a prediction on Monday Night Football with Pritch and Michael. But I wanted to ask you just to put a bow on some of this coaching stuff. Michael, I'll start with you here. Barry Odom hired at UNLV. Of course, coached at Missouri, went down to Arkansas. What did you think of the hire of Barry Odom?
Interesting. You know, I like Barry a lot, and I've talked to Barry a lot during the years. 25-25 as the head coach of Missouri, you know, took over for Gary Pinkel, kind of wasn't able to be his own man there. I think he learned a lot from his experience. I think he spent every day as not being a head coach working on becoming this. I don't think he'll make any mistakes. I think he'll recruit hard. He's a tough guy. I think he'll bring a sense of toughness to their team, which I think they need in this conference. And it's going to come down to handling the program. But I like Barry a lot, and I hope he does well. I'm hoping to help him as much as I possibly can.
Rich, what did you think of the hire there? That's your hometown. What did you think UNLV hiring Barry Odom?
Yeah, I hope it stabilizes the program. I mean, I think the issue with UNLV over time has been just a revolving door, whether it's coaches, assistant coaches, or athletic directors, or even presidents, right? I mean, UNLV's on another athletic director, and he didn't hire Marcus Arroyo, and now this AD wants to hire Odom, which is fine, but I hope the AD sticks around to make sure this plan works out. Back in when UNLV was stable, Harvey Hyde, I mean, around here was a legend, you know, with the type of program that he had right there. And so I think UNLV has to get back to that stabilizer program, and hopefully this hire is going to do that.
I don't know what it is about UNLV, Michael. You started your career there. I
was with Harvey.
You were.
Yeah, I was with Harvey. I mean, you know, he came in there. He was, he and Harvey Hyde's brother, Harvey Hyde's best friend in life was Myron Tarkanian, who passed away, God rest his soul. And Myron's obviously Jerry's brother, and that's how Harv got that job there. Jerry pushed for him. He was the head coach at Pasadena City College. He came in, and he built a program. And we were in the PC2A. On campus was Randall Cunningham when he got there. And just kind of worked and grind with no money. I mean, really, no money. There was not, you know, because there's no state income tax from Nevada. So everything's kind of, you got to hustle your way to get money in the program. And they've done that. They've got, I mean, that football facility over at UNLV, Mike, is incredible. I mean, it's one of the nicest in the country.
Yeah, and the Petita Center, yeah.
Yeah, and so you can recruit. I mean, one thing about Vegas is there's direct flights to Vegas from everywhere. So it's you got to recruit, and Harvey did a great job recruiting Los Angeles, inner city LA. He did a great job of recruiting Las Vegas, which has talent. Even then they had talent. And you got to be able to then get that talent and develop it and get it going. I think Barry's energy level, I think Mike said it well. There's been too many guys that have come there. You know, John Robinson was at the end. There are too many guys that have come there that haven't been at the right mindset. And I think Barry is of that right mindset. He knows he's not going to mess up, because he's been living with being 25-25 at Missouri, which is a hell of a record at Missouri, but it wasn't good enough for Missouri.
Yeah. You know what? Can I ask a question
ahead,
real
Rich,
quick
please.
To
no,
Michael?
Please.
Because from a betting perspective, and we see this whether it's college football or professional, the NFL, like what makes a great head coach, or what makes even a good head coach? Because Nathaniel Hackett is not working out in Denver, even though he's probably a good coach, right? And it's like,
right.
I know there's probably multiple layers to it, Michael, but in terms of identifying a great head coach or a good head coach. Yeah.
I think it's somebody who can see the big picture, somebody who understands the whole landscape. I think when you look at using Nathaniel, I mean, he can only call plays. He doesn't understand the whole game. He doesn't understand how to set up a game plan, how to manage it. If you're running his team and you know you're good on defense, how do you set up your offense so that it complements your defense and plays in three dimensions? And how do you work on the kicking game? How do you get toughness to your team? Those are all the things the head coach has to do. He's got to be able to bring that together. Because he's seeing all three units. When you leave it to your coordinators, all they care about is getting first downs or stopping first downs. All they care about is scoring points or not allowing points. You know, and so somebody's got to tie it together. And somebody who's sat in that chair can do it and be demanding of the coaches as much as you're demanding of the players.
That was a tremendous 12 minutes. That's why Pritch is the best. You can go so much experience, direct experience with these teams with Michael and Pritch. So a good take there on Colorado, UNLV. And when we return, I want to ask you about taking 17.5 with the Texans and what that means to a player when they're disrespected like that. We're coming back with Pritch here on the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, you want rewards? The king of sportsbooks, BetMGM, has them for you. Wager at BetMGM, earn BetMGM reward points, and you can convert those points into MGM. You know, whether it's free bets, you can convert those reward points into airfare to Vegas, dining, shows, anything you want. Every time you place a bet at BetMGM, you get points. Okay, you use those points for free bets and others. BetMGM.com, download the BetMGM app. If you have a gambling issue, it's 1-800-GAMBLER. Got to be 21 years or older. Monday. We can throw up Pritch's bio as we welcome you back. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. Mike Pritchard joins us every Monday, and it's a pretty impressive, as you see, Mike Pritchard, of course, a first-round draft pick back in the day, Pritch, in 91. But you see the accolades. That's why we love Pritch. Not only that, he's a great guy. Okay, let's get to it. And I want to start here. You took the Texans, and I think this is interesting from a former player's perspective. Michael said there's a opportunity you could see an apathetic Cowboys team. You did see that. Do players know? So, for example, from the Cowboys locker room, this isn't a very good team. But also, did the Texans know they're getting disrespected? It was a 17.5 point spread. That was a big story, Pritch.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Texans, and without any knowledge about their game plan, I mean, on offense, they rotated quarterbacks and they had a plan that way that kind of maybe threw the Dallas Cowboys off. But from a player's perspective, the week of practice in Houston was probably fun, right? Think about that. You're miserable. You're not winning, but hey, we're going to try this and see if it works. Okay, let's buy into it and try to make it work. And I think on defense too, maybe a more spirited effort, you know, certainly understanding what Dallas Cowboys are capable of and making it difficult that way. You just bring the energy and perhaps good things can happen. And to me, that was all the Texans were about in that game. I took the 17.5 points because I thought the Cowboys had been riding high into what your point is about, okay, you're playing the Texans, right? What is the week of practice going to be like? Are you just going to go over your core plays? Are you going to do anything special for this football team? Probably not. Are you going to be polished in practice? You know, if you had a track record of being a champion, a la the Patriots or a la like a dynasty, if you had that track record and there was a standard in place, then I wouldn't buy into the fact that there could be a letdown. But we know that the Dallas Cowboys are prone to make mistakes, lack of discipline and all this. And I'm thinking, okay, this is the perfect opportunity for a letdown. And so, yeah, I did take 17.5 points and that worked out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as I said on the pod, it's hard to get your team ready to play against a team you're 17.5 point favorite. You walk in the room and say, hey, we got the Texans this week. They're a good team. And then they start watching the Browns tape. And wait a minute, you know, we talked about being honest as a leader. It's hard to be honest when they're watching the tape of the Texans, how bad they are. So you can't really show much tape of the Texans in terms because it's only going to reinforce it's going to be an easy game. So you've got to try to invent ways to create, to make the Texans seem better than they are. But you also, what Mike said there is so critical. You've got to rely on your players who want to play at a higher level, who want to reach a standard that's beyond the Texans. Like that's the game where you go in there and say, look, we're not playing the Texans this week. We're playing against us. This is about us, not about the Texans. Because that's the only way you can get their attention. Because they're going to read that 17.5 and say, well, all we got to do is show up. And you know what happened? They played one quarter and they got away with it.
Right.
And it took a heroic drive at the end, right, Pritch? I mean, this was
a goal line stand and a drive, Patrick.
The goal line stand. That's a great point. I mean, if they lost as a 17.5 point favorite at home, that would have been Pritch. That would have been one of the bigger upsets we've seen in 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, think about it, too. Lovie Smith, I don't know why he didn't challenge that almost touchdown.
Great, I thought it was to a touchdown, Pritch. I thought it
so
was
did
a touchdown.
I, Michael.
Didn't
I'm like,
challenge yeah, why that. What do you got to lose?
Right.
What are we doing?
Exactly. And then, you know, it was just unfortunate for the opportunity there for them to squander that. They'll kick a field goal even on fourth down, right, and make the Cowboys score a touchdown. I think there was no pressure on the Cowboys at home knowing that they could just score a field goal and tie that game and get in overtime and still have a chance to win it. I think if you would have kicked a field goal there on fourth down instead of going for it, perhaps you put the pressure on the Cowboys of actually entertaining the thought, we could lose this game to the Texans at home. But Lovie didn't do that. And there's a difference in caliber in my situation.
So, ironically, Michael and Pritch, you guys were on the same page yesterday. So Pritch was 1-0 there with the Texans, but also he went 2-0 with two teases, and he anchored the Eagles in both teases. He teased the Eagles down and the Ravens up, and then he teased the Eagles down and the Bengals down. Why don't we start with the Ravens? You teased them up. Michael was on the Ravens as well. What did you see in their matchup against Pittsburgh?
Well, in the matchup, I saw Pittsburgh limited on offense in terms of touchdown touchdowns scored offensively. I think, if I can remember the number correctly, 8 touchdown passes from the starting quarterback, right? Kenny Pickett. Not very prolific from that in that regard. So you're thinking about the matchup, the history. It's a one possession game. I didn't anticipate any injuries or both quarterbacks getting knocked out. I just thought teasing the dog up in this situation would be advantageous. And then anchoring it with the Eagles. The Eagles are playing great football right now, but it's a road situation inside a division. I could have laid it, but I just felt more comfortable with that kind of teaser situation. It's minus 120, and you know, that can cash very well for you. And I felt like the probabilities were in my favor to be able to cash that type of ticket. And the same thing with the Eagles on the Bengals. I caught the Bengals at 6, so I teased them down to a pick 'em at home in the face of facing Cleveland. And I know Burrow has not beaten the Browns. And so you think about the divisional matchup again, familiarity and all of that. And just from a teaser standpoint and laying minus 120, that was the way that I could see with my card this weekend, this past weekend, of cashing those tickets.
Yeah, because smart play. I mean, look, yep. I think the other thing you got to take into your handicap is who's playing good and who's not. You know, like,
right.
Mike, we were on Sunday morning and the line went from 5.5 down to 3.5 and back up to 4. Yeah. And Patrick and I couldn't understand it because, you know, Joe Burrow was playing great. Watson was horrible. You know, the Bengals' defense is really good in the second half. They play well. They adjust. I know that they hadn't beaten them. But to me, that's more motivation for them that they were going to win, not that it was going to stay on track. I think sometimes these trends kind of make us not see clearly.
Correct. And I think people sorry, Patrick, but
no,
like
please.
But there's sharps out there that were insinuating that, okay, the Bengals beat Kansas City. You know, they slayed the dragon and all this. But to Michael's point, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, they beat Kansas City, but they thought they were going to beat Kansas City. They believed that, and now they still have to take care of business. I mean, I think a lot of teams want that home field advantage if you can get it. So I didn't anticipate any type of letdown in that game against the Browns.
Okay, tremendous. Nice 3-0 week for you, Pritch. We got a couple of minutes here, so let's focus on tonight. You know, I see a 2 out there. Michael, I'll start with you. I see a 2 out there, but mostly 2.5s right now. Now, the 2.5's 110, so it doesn't look like it's going up to 3. But I think we're probably going to close New England laying 2.5 and a total right around 44, Michael.
You know, I just think to me, New England, you know, they're big, they're physical up front. You know, they're hard to consistently move the ball on. I think if they rush Kyler the right way and they're going to take away Hopkins with double teams all over the field, it's going to be hard for them to get going. And I think they can run the ball. I think the Seattle proved you can run the ball in Arizona. Now, they're going to have to throw it first to run it. But this is a big game for New England. This is one of those where I think their players are chomping at the bit. They haven't played since they got humiliated by Buffalo. They gave away a game in Minnesota. I think they'll play well. I think they beat Arizona tonight.
Okay, Pritch, what do we got here? A 2.5 and 44 is what I'm going to give you.
Yeah, earlier it was 1.5. I mean, that was a nice situation right there if you like the Patriots. 2.5, you're still underneath the field goal. You know, the thing about the Patriots and what's been said about their offense all year, and certainly what Coach Belichick has talked about, we're not going to change anything. We have to execute better. So that, to me, that's code for we're going to have some pretty good practices, or we need to have some pretty good practices. And I try to buy into that as a bettor. So I'm anticipating that the Patriots offensively had better practices. They're going to be prepared for all the pressured looks from Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator for the Cardinals. And to me, the Cardinals, they don't have all the pieces in place to be consistent for 60 minutes offensively or defensively. So I give the Patriots a great chance of winning this one and absolutely covering that number by a field goal.
Okay. Both on the Pats tonight. Can we show a three-way shot? Yeah, I think this is important. If you look behind Michael, you have his accolades from his career, probably got his rings behind him. You look behind Pritch, he's got his Dirty Bird. He's got his Falcons and Colorado jersey. Behind me is a wood wall. So that is the difference between the three of us. It's just like,
hey, Pritch, let me ask you real quick.
Go ahead.
When you saw all the NBC people betting the Miami, did you go and put a bet on the Chargers immediately?
I did not, but Brady Cannon did. I mean, Brady was all over it on the Pro Football.
I think it was like 12 people were on Miami. Literally. Nobody.
So
an outright winner for Herbert. Michael, Yeah. Enjoy your day off. Enjoy Monday Night Football. Appreciate you. Pritch.
Thank you, Patrick.
Do the same.
Thank you, Pritch.
Thank you, guys.
Great job, Elliot.
Have a great day.
Big Bets is next. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.